Check, check. I hear myself.
Yeah.
Puzzles.
That's what this bill does, and that's when we talked with DNR, they wanted to ensure that the heightened fiduciary duty was not going with this, so that the university couldn't come in and say, I'm more special than anybody else, and you're not managing the land to benefit me the way I wanted. So no, they would not be able to look over the state's shoulder and say, do this, oh no, do this over here. We're trying to avoid that here.
We have more questions, but I'll let other committee members ask theirs.
And I guess that comes under tenancy in common. And we're not allowed to, are we allowed to dedicate lands? Maybe that's a DNR question. We can get to that in a little bit. Representative Seaton?
Yes, I was wanting to get some explanation on Section 2, that's page 2, basically lines 23 on there. And where it says these lands on line 27, is not and may not be treated as state public domain lands. Could you explain what the designation of state public domain lands are, and if these can't be treated as public domain lands, what restrictions are put upon these lands by that clause?
Okay, and that's a very good question, and what that says is that that the University of Alaska has some lands already. And so they are not underneath the jurisdiction of the state as to how they develop those. That's the purpose of land grants, let a university have an independent source of income, and then they can manage their land and do the best way they can with it and make some extra money. And I'm glad you brought that out, because that was one of the other places we had starred that we're working with DNR. The way this is written, and it's not the intent, is that the 1% of lands are not coming outside of the state domain, and so this language is being changed. Actually, the stuff that's in bold will most likely be deleted, and the land that the university will be part of is this tenancy in common. I'm glad you brought that up, Representative Seaton.
Again, a follow-up?
Follow-up for Representative Seaton.
It seems to me that, you know, we're getting into, on page 5, a conveyance and a selection process. We know how difficult that land selection process has been, between whether it's native selections or whether it's the state selections. And I'm trying to figure out why, if we're talking about 1% of the lands, and then we go through a very administratively complex and expensive process of designating which lands, why didn't we take the tack? Or would it be acceptable to take the tack, 1% of the revenues generated from state lands? And that way we don't have to get into this selection process, which is going to be very difficult, trying, and expensive, I believe.
Well, that's exactly what you want to see, is exactly what the bill's doing. There is no selection process. You're conveying a tenancy in common. And so there's no selection of land. You end up owning 1% of the whole pie, but it's an undivided 1% of the whole pie. And so there's no actual physical land that's transferred to you. It's a right that's transferred to you.
Yes, a follow-up. Well, on line 12 on page 5, the way I read it is, the commissioner shall convey to the University of Alaska
and the state. And the state of Alaska. And this is where this is where I pointed out that the language, it's not exactly written the way it's supposed to be written. It's very close, and what it says, what it's supposed to say, is that you convey the land. What the state of Alaska will do is convey the land, and then the university ends up owning 1% of the state land, and the state owns 99%. And they own it together, tenancy in common. Remember the grandkids? And that's what this is supposed to say. And when you read it the way you're reading it, that was the inarticulateness. And we met with Bob Loeffler this morning, to talk about that very issue, about how a little bit of the language was put in incorrectly. And so we're working on fixing that.
I think this is an excellent time to take some public testimony, if we can. So I'm going to go first to Bob Loeffler.
I'm
only here to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, then I'll go to Carl Rose. And it looks like he left. Well, look how quick it went.
We do have Joe Beadle, Vice President for University of Alaska. I believe he's online.
Right, yeah, you're right. Online, Joe Beadle, are you there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's got a couple names, Joe Beadle, Meg Green. Are you both together?
We are.
Maybe you can combine the testimony because we are short on time as much as you can.
Joe Beadle, Vice President for Finance, University of Alaska System, and Meg Green, Associate General Counsel at the University of Alaska. Chair Gatto, members of the House Special Committee on Education, and sponsors of House Bill 333. As a land-grant university, we are familiar with this endowment mechanism to help fund education. Federal land-grant efforts dating back to 1915 and 1929 attempted to transfer 360,000 acres to our university. Unfortunately, less than one-third was ultimately transferred, placing us last of all land-grant universities or college states. A couple of statistics for those other states. New Mexico, 1.3 million acres. Oklahoma, 1 million acres. New York, 1 million acres. Arizona, 850,000 acres. Pennsylvania, 780,000 acres. University of Alaska, in the range of 115,000 acres, has approximately one-tenth of 1% of the state of the state lands, the 104 million acres Representative Ogg referred to. The least amount in any state was 0.75%. If we had the average of all of the state land grant states, if there was an average of 5% of the lands, and that would place the university in the 5 million acre category. To repeat, we're in the 115,000 acres. As very adequately communicated, the University of Alaska has not received parity as compared to these other states. As you talked about, is 1% sufficient, and equating that to 500,000 acres? And as Representative Ogg referred to the revenue potential generation, I would argue that 1% is a minimal kind of approach, arguing that there are questions left unanswered in terms of the shrinkage of revenue maybe dedicated for mineral resource going to the permanent fund, 25%, or any shrinkage that might occur from the dedication to by DNR, the cost of administering these lands and the shrinkage that might occur by deducting that from the university proceeds. Referring briefly to the legislative research document based on the Department of Revenue's projections for new resource revenue, we appreciate over a 25-year estimated time period that there could be $34 billion accumulated in nominal terms. 1% for education, $342 million over that lifetime, for an average over the lifetime of $13.7 million, or split 6.8 higher ed split with K-12. I would agree that that could average, in terms of the PLMD approach, $15 to $20 million in the year 2030. So looking out 25 years from now, we could in fact benefit by having earnings off of those endowed proceeds approximating between $15 and $20 million. I would note that the backup schedules provided by legislative research from the Department of Revenue show that it's 2012 when you assume all four, ANWR, Buford C, Beaufort C, Central North Slope, NPRA, all four have to work, and then the gas line was asked to do a fiscal note for the university, I would be assuming then $100 million to the state. And again, that doesn't start to occur under this Department of Revenue forecast until 2012. $100 million, K-12 gets $500,000, university gets $500,000. So if we assume the stream so that it's static, but a stream of $500,000 per year, because of prudent investment percentage of market value draws, we would only have $5,000 at the end of the second year to spend, because you would assume 20%, so one-fifth, 5 years averaging of the $500,000, 5% earnings. So at year six, we would have that first contribution where all of the money was invested, $500,000 a year, 4 or 5 years equal $2.5 million. At year six, then that average for the 5 years would be $1.5 million. So we would receive $75,000 in year six. In year 10, assuming again minimalistic $100 million per year, 1% split K-12 university, we would enjoy $200,000 per year in year 11. So it certainly pales in comparison to our total need for state general funds, and it would beg the question, is 1% in fact enough? Should it be raised to maybe 4% or so to roughly equivalent, something meaningful? A couple of final comments. The UA currently administers our own land grant development and conversion process. So we have these 150,000 acres, we administer them, we extract resources, we sell them. Money proceeds go into a fund. And so we manage the land, and then we have a land grant trust fund endowment, and it's recognized by statute. And we currently have the POMV process, and we've had it since 1996, and we pay out 5% of the five-year average balances.
Okay, thanks, Joe. We're running short on time. Can you just pull it together in the next half a minute?
Ben, thank you. We would appreciate your support for this bill endowing education, and we would look forward to working with the bill sponsors and the writers for some technical aspects. Thank you.
Thanks. Next, I want to go to Mark Myers. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm here just really to answer a question, as is Bob Leffler.
Okay. Well, then I don't have any other public testimony that needs to be addressed here, so we have any more questions from the committee? Representative Guerra?
Yeah. I guess the first question, I guess, is for Representative Ogg. Let me just get my math straight. I think what is the total state K-12 and university budget right now? About roughly $1 billion?
Pretty close.
Yeah. So if we're going to dedicate a portion of state revenue from state lands to the university in K-12, and it ends up funding a very, very, very small portion of their annual budget needs, what's the difference between funding it by giving them a portion of this money that comes out of state lands as opposed to just asking for it through the general fund? I mean, why does this help any?
Well, I think what the bill does, the bill recognizes a historical trend in this country that for land grant universities that you actually give them the land, or you give them an independent revenue source. And what that does is it allows the universities to have somewhat of a little independence from the political process. Not much, but a little bit. And you don't want to go down that road completely with your public university or your public education, but a little bit's not a bad thing. And it's been recognized since, pretty much day one when the Western cultures landed, that this would be part of how this country operated. And another reason to go down this road is that the federal government's the one who set up the program, and it's up to the state here to sort of pick it up, and it was part of the 103 million acres, so it's sort of living up, fulfilling a bargain, a promise of some sort. And then the other side of the coin is on the federal side. when the governor was a senator, he put in matching land grant bills that if the state gave a grant to the university, then the feds would pony up. What happened on the federal side all the time, the governor, then senator, was that the same oxes were being gored, and the federal government wouldn't give the land to the university or wouldn't pass that. But if the state does this, if we do this and fulfill the land grant, then the senators in Washington, they could say, here's a way we can fulfill that promise of a land grant, and the amount of monies that would flow from the federal side are far and exceed what the state monies would be. And so actually use this to stair-step yourself into fulfilling the real federal land grant to the university by giving a little bit of the state.
A question for Bob Loeffler.
Go ahead.
Thanks,
Representative
Bob.
Gareth has a question for Bob Loeffler, and he's coming up to the podium.
So, Bob, the way it's been explained, or at least the way I understand it, is that by giving the university and public schools a 1% interest in the total of all state lands, this isn't going to dictate that the DNR then goes sell 1% of our land, or that it manage any existing land any differently than it does today. Is that fair?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I think that's fair. My understanding is that there are some errors in drafting that Representative Ogg has been very good at sharing with us. And assuming those errors are correct, it really is transparent. It's really transparent to us where the revenue goes. So whether the fact that we convey an undiluted 1% interest in the land, which gives them a share of the revenue stream, but we retain all the management authorities and direction that we now have, is where I understand the bill is intended to go. And so when they do that, it's really a policy decision for this body, and I'm irrelevant.
I'm going to have to close down here in about a minute because there's a third bill, which happens to be mine. So I've yielded an hour and 55 minutes to the first two, and mine is I just need to get it introduced. So I'm going to have to allow. So I have about 1 minute to go. Representative Seaton, if you'd like
Thank
to give
you.
The finishing
yes,
comment.
Well, for Bob, I was wondering, apparently this grant of land is including the subsurface rights. Because that's where the money is being generated from that we're talking about. But as my understanding in the Statehood Act, if we transfer the subsurface rights, the federal government takes them back.
Representative, understanding if we just do an undiluted interest of 1% for everything, that in fact it's still managed by DNR, the revenues still go to purposes of the state. I can check with the AG's office, but I don't think that's a problem.
Please do that.
With that, I'm going to close testimony and hold this bill over. I'd like now to introduce my own bill, HB 405, which is an act relating to accountability of public schools and school districts and reports. My opening statement is simply that...
Mr. Chair, would you like me to get this in front of the committee?
It's version A.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill number 405... 23-LS-1533/A for discussion.
Okay, any objections? Without objection, what I have is a need for some conceptual amendments to address some drafting errors. Go ahead. Might as well have Fred from the Department of Education come up and make some conceptual amendments, and then we'll hold this one over until we can come back with the revisions.
My name is Les Morris. I'm the Director of Assessment and Accountability for the Department of Education and Early Development.
And I'm Barbara Thompson, the Director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support.
Okay. And I apologize for waiting this long, but we're going to get all three done here today.
The one piece in this legislation that needs to be changed and what it's intended to do is in 1403-123A refers to a designation system of assigning performance designations of distinguished, sufficient, deficient, or excuse me, distinguished, successful, deficient, or in crisis. And this legislation was actually intended to remove that language and have one accountability system that would be compliant with the federal requirements that we have.
All we're trying to do here is align the state requirements with the federal requirements so we don't have to meet them both. We just meet the federal, which means the state is the same as the federal. So can I have a motion from someone to address a conceptual amendment to allow for us to have the drafter fix the distinguished, successful, deficient, and in crisis labeling? Representative Wilson? Okay, and I'm going to ask to revise that to also accept the No Child Left Behind standards that are in question here. Are there any objections? Oh, thank you so much. Without objection, I'm going to hold this bill over for that, too. So we're 3-for-3 today on holding bills. But we got out of here at enough time for Representative Ogg and others to go to some other committees. And I appreciate your attendance. Thank you so much. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.